It's the Doctor on Triple J.
Very happy to introduce to you, if you have not already met them, Kayvon Novak and Chris Morris. Hello, gentlemen.
Oh, Finn.
Hello.
Hello, how are you going? I've turned the wrong microphone on, I'm sorry.
Which one was it? Did you miss my hello?
No, I got you. I got you.
Oh,
both.
You missed my hello.
You're both wonderful. Now, I'm rather excited, I've got to say, to speak to you both, but specifically you, Chris Morris, though not meaning to take anything away from you at all.
No, that's
he's
all
gone
right.
now.
That's it.
Yeah, I'll just hang back and read a magazine.
But in terms of comedy, which really pushes it to the fringes, you're a man who has found the funny side of stuff like good AIDS and bad AIDS, fictitious drugs like cake, a pedophile disguised as a school, selling your mentally disabled younger sister as collateral in a real estate purchase, and now you have turned your hand to film, and it's a comedy about four British jihadists. Why do you reckon that would work?
I think that's the mildest of the list that you've just
really?
Come up with.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a comedy about four British jihadists doesn't sound as bad as selling a retarded person to raise money to buy a house.
True.
Does it?
You couldn't... No, you're right.
Oh, right, you just said that basically selling your sister... You said that you've defended terrorism just then.
Yes, I have. That's right. But that's what I do every afternoon.
No, we just did an interview with the movie show where the guy interviewing me basically ended up defending terrorism.
That's
as well.
Dave Stratton.
Yeah,
I had to...
No, it wasn't. It was his proxy.
Oh,
yeah.
He has a proxy.
His proxy. He sends a proxy in.
And then he comes
and his
in.
His proxy said, look, between you and me, mate, I was with the guys in your film all the way. I was backing them. And I had to basically douse him. Yeah, you weren't there. You're looking at me stunned. Yeah. So what is it with you people?
It's the Australian way, you know. It's fair go for all.
Exactly. I think there's a lid off. There's a shake it up and, you know, shake up the Fanta and let the lid off.
Yes. That's
a non-alcoholic drink.
Exactly, as it is a youth radio station. But you have not only found, a certain amount of humour in the trials and tribulations of these people who are actually planning to bomb the London Marathon, but you've also just shown them as just four or five just dudes, just idiots.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't come from nowhere. That was basically, it was a sort of slow falling into a realisation that actually that's more like what really happens than what you tend to get through the headlines. And it started off from reading, and then I met a load of people to get the background context, and I found myself attending a court case where it was just that. It was a bunch of seven guys who had 600 kilos of fertiliser, so their intentions were not just, they were not immaterial, but they sat around talking absolute bollocks the whole time. And it would be weird, you know, the kind of the mishmash of the conversation. They'd be talking about last night's TV. They'd be talking about some great gadget that they had or how some girl at college thought he looked like Frodo. Do the other guys think he looks like Frodo? And then the next thing they'd say is, oh, by the way, it'd be great if he brought down an airliner, wouldn't it? And then they carry on talking about what's on TV tomorrow night or just the vacuousness of the conversation. I remember one guy in the transcript saying, I only started watching the news last year. This Bin Laden guy, has he done anything else? Yeah, you know, these are supposed to be the guys who are reading direct from the book, you know.
Let's have a listen to a little bit from Four Lions.
Fuge. What we're going to do has got a blast in history. Echo through the ages.
Blow something up.
What we're going to blow up, Wadge?
Internet.
Now, Kayvon Novak, you play Wadge. You play the main bomber dude, Omar's best mate.
Yeah.
And you don't play the smartest guy, it's fair to say.
No. He's a bit of a dum-dum, but, you know, a very handsome.
Very dum-dum. Handsome.
Which is always a challenge, you know. When Chris asked me to play a dum-dum, I said, okay, but can I make him handsome? And he said... Yeah.
So you didn't You've get got 2 years for the plastic surgery. Yeah, I'm going to take a long time to write this.
Well, if you know anything about Kayvon Novak, you know from his TV show Facejacker, he's not new to prosthetics to make people look different, but you didn't need them for this.
He's no oil painter.
But you also gave him, you know, this sort of, it's almost like this wide-eyed optimism. If you put aside the subject matter, which is blowing up a bunch of innocent people, this wide-eyed optimism about the power that you had.
I don't know. I guess he just he's there to follow Omar's way, really, and then just to listen and try and learn and understand. And he finds that quite difficult. And I think ultimately, in the end, it's his kind of innocence that guides Omar. And makes him see the light.
It seems it comes from Christianity, really, you know, that Christ said we should be childlike, and Wadge is childlike, and it's Wadge's childlike conscience that gives Omar the biggest turn in the film.
It seems that, actually, when you were talking about the terrorists or potential terrorists that didn't really know what bin Laden had really done, that that's kind of where Wadge's character comes from.
But they were ugly, though.
I'm talking to Chris Morris and Kayvan Novak about Four Lines. Let's listen to some music and we'll talk a little bit more about the humour to be found in suicide bombing. I have Chris Morris, radio and TV and now filmmaker extraordinaire and TV maker and karaoke legend, Kayvan Novak.
That's me.
I only wish we had some karaoke here that we could do, you know, get something going.
Okay.
But we don't, so...
Show me an enormous microphone and I'll show you the world.
Wow, that's beautiful. That could have been straight out of Four Lines. This is, though, a little bit from the trailer of your brand new film.
Hey, you don't believe in kafar bastards. I'm going to turn you, baby.
No.
What?
What's with the gun?
Proper replica, man.
It's too small, man.
Not too small, brother.
Big hands.
The way to stop the feds tracking you is very simple. You eat your SIM card.
Can I cook, man?
Was there a real story of someone, potential jihadists being thinking they could, you know, avoid detection by swallowing SIM cards?
Funnily enough, no.
Right.
I can categorically say no. That was at least one thing we had to make up.
And the shaking of the face to avoid being noticed by CCTV?
Again, no. Right. I'd like to emphasise the amount of hard work it took that you actually to extrapolate reality into this film.
But there were actual farcical parts of real life which influenced, you know, the bumble-headed jihadists in this film.
Yeah, I think basically conversations which in transcript look like stoner conversations are a pretty good starting point. If you found that there are funny things in the execution of terrifying terrorist plots, either if they go wrong or even in the following of the procedures which ultimately leads to them going right, you find things which are silly, then it's pretty good once you set off on that path to find your position substantiated by high court trial cases where people are talking like stoners. As I say, sort of being... I mean, there's a great bit of conversation where one guy comes in. They've got these guys had pet rabbits on their balcony in the flat where they used to meet. It was called the Crevice Trial in Britain. And there's one bit where one guy comes in and says, brothers, this whole civilization, it's crumbling around us. It's not going to last much longer. And the other guy goes, yeah, how are your rabbits? And you just think this level of mundane against their grand sort of cosmic ramblings is a gift. And it's not that you take it directly, but it means that you can see how you can be funny about a subject where you wouldn't necessarily think there were many jokes.
And this is things also that I read that you discovered in your research, like a guy that got expelled from a training camp for pissing too loudly, and then he blamed the thin walls.
Nearly, yeah. People get expelled from training camps for breaking certain rules. I mean, I met a guy who'd been to training camp, and he had long hair, and he asked questions of the emir who was in charge of them, and on day two, the emir grabbed him by his long hair and hauled him round the camp, berating him for having hair like a woman and saying, you British, you ask too many questions, any more questions and I'll throw you off camp. You know, and he was kind of, that was a mild example. There are other people, you know, a guy shot someone's foot off by mishandling a gun. Two guys had a fight over a jar of honey because food on training camps is notoriously bad. One guy was cuddling a teddy bear and got sent home for being ridiculous, you know, because often these guys go out and they're quite young and it's sometimes their first trip away from home. So, and particularly the Brits who, the sort of British Pakistanis are, to make a gross generalisation, generally held by Pakistani Pakistanis as being a bit soft. They've gone over there one or two generations later. They're just full of the easy life. And then they come back and they can't cut it in the hard lands, and particularly the mountainous regions where the weather can take you by surprise, where it's cold, often wet. And, you know, they notoriously turn up with the wrong footwear, with too many clothes, and they spend most of their time sort of whimpering, running around the hills and crying.
An example is, Kayvan, when your character, Wadge, and Omar do go to Pakistan in the film and you don't have much luck, it's fair to say.
No, we mess it up quite quite atrociously.
And so did you have any were you a bit worried about making this film at any point, being an Iranian British person?
Not really, no. I mean, I was mainly concerned about being as funny as possible in a Chris Morris film about suicide bombers. I thought, if I'm going to be bad, let's not be bad in this.
And about your grooming as well, you were pretty... Mm.
Yeah, the grooming was important, because, my beard in the film is quite manicured in a lot of ways, but not in all the ways that I'd hoped it could have been.
And you're also playing up against one of the other, I guess the fifth line was a wannabe rapper who had very well sculpted sideburns. So I guess facial hair does play an important role.
That's true, yeah. The fifth line, I'm sure Arsha, who isn't listening because he's not in Sydney. Can you listen to this radio station?
Online,
We do have the internet here.
Right, so Arsha has just been referred to as the fifth lion. I'll be reminding him of that when I go back to London.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, is he technically the fourth because he doesn't blow up at
He'd like to think really. He was, but...
Yeah, he becomes one of the four, doesn't he? It's a grey area.
Let's not
no
give
interest.
Two up away of which of who blows up when and whether anyone blows up. But we're talking about blowing things up because Four Lions is a film about jihadists, and it's a comedy. Chris Morris and Kayvan Novak are in the studio. Let's just have a listen to a little bit of another song, and then I would like to talk a little bit more to you guys because it's pretty exciting having you guys in the country. Chris Morris, you would know him as Denim Renum from the IT Crowd, the writer of Nathan Barley, Brass Eye, the main newsreader dude, and on the day-to-day, Jam and Blue Jam, started the careers of different shows like, Big Train and moving on to that, Shaun of the Dead, etc., in the studio, and a gentleman whose previous work includes Phone Jacker and Face Jacker, and now Four Lions, Kayvan Novak. Hello.
Hello.
Now, what sort of hurdles do you encounter trying to make a film about four British jihadists?
Once you've actually started making it in the filming process, you're over most of the hurdles, I think, in a subject like this. I mean, basically, it's still very hard to get good performances out of people like this.
Yeah.
Now, it's still very... I mean, it's still hard. The process of making the film and keeping it on track. He's left the room now. Have you got another nosebleed?
Yeah.
He's got a nosebleed. What is this? Is this the movie star life?
This is the blizzard of cocaine I was hearing about on ABC News this morning that seems to have taken over Sydney. It was pretty much as if the air is full of it. I don't know. They were sort of... It was very casual, the news reporting this morning. It was sort of saying...
Casual, but very talkative, perhaps?
Suspiciously, they were very relaxed about the idea of it. In fact, they were saying, cocaine use is on the rise in Sydney. Still, that'll explain why people are working so hard. And it was kind of like, I just thought, what? This is not the kind of analysis I would have expected. Normally, this would be reported as trouble. I mean, it's given Kayvan a few nosebleeds, but apart from that, he's fine. But I think now he's out of the room, I can say anything. But the process of making the film, once we were doing it, we had to be a bit secret. We had to make sure that there was another film called Brick Lane, which had got into trouble a couple of years previously and been brought to a halt. Because if you want to bring a film to a halt...
That wasn't a comedy, though, Brick Lane.
It's dead easy. No, it wasn't a comedy, but it was... It had a, there was the significant point was that a very small number of people could bring it to a halt, and they did.
Right.
If our film had been brought to a halt, we would have had nowhere to go because we're on a small budget and there is no sort of retrenchment position. You are committed to filming. We were filming in Sheffield. You're committed to filming at the locations that you've booked, and there's nothing you can do. You can't retreat to a studio. There was no CGI or, we couldn't do any blue screen days. There were no blue screen days.
So if someone in the town, in Sheffield, where you were filming, said they didn't want it, they could get enough community support and shut you down.
Well, look, three people with not even a loud hailer, but just a referee's whistle, that can ruin your day's filming. You'd just be going, sorry, there's a sound. I mean, like, the number of times you have to stop when a helicopter goes over or something like that. If you're using location sound, which we weren't going to redub everything. So if you want to bring a film to it, if you hear of a film being made and you don't like the sound of it, then you can just turn up with a whistle and you can bring the whole thing crashing down around its own stupid ears.
Especially if they hear that the person behind the film is Chris Morris, who was previously responsible for this...
Last month, the notorious paedophile Sidney Cook was blasted into space to spend the rest of his life aboard a one-man prison vessel, posing no further threat to children on Earth. But it was revealed that an 8-year-old boy was also placed on board by mistake and is now trapped alone in space with the monster. A spokesman said, "This is the one thing we didn't want to happen."
Now, that was from Brass Eye, a series that you did, and that you got all over the news because of that show, which was a very satirical look at the media reporting in pedophilia in Britain. So people would, you know, people know you in Britain, basically.
So that's why they would... Well, actually, you're right. I mean, you're dead on. We didn't want people sort of incorrectly deciding that 2 plus 2 equaled 4, mm-hmm. which, of course, it never does, and deciding that if we were filming in Sheffield, we were going to be doing something that would be worth stopping. And to be, you know, so movement orders every day were disguised as children's party invitations. This is just to continue the paedophilia scene. No, but they look like little 5-year-olds' party invitations covered in balloons, and they were saying, you know, come to Quentin's party on, you know, Friday morning. And then if you look closer, you'd see that it was on Friday at 5 a.m., mm-hmm. assemble in a car park on the edge of town. You'd have to think, what a pretty weird kids' party this is going to be.
It's almost like the way that in the film and in other reports, jihadists would organise. It was how you would organise to shoot this film.
A little bit, you know, just to make sure that we weren't put out of business before we'd started. And in terms of your question about how hard it was to get this thing together, the hardest thing, I think, really, was finding the solid ground to stand on which to write the script, because you know this subject is there to be written about and examined from all angles, but you do have to, it's incumbent upon you to understand what the background for this is and what it means to be a Muslim and what it means to be a Muslim in Britain and all the rest of that. You know, being a Muslim in different parts of the world means different things. So you have to sort of understand that, meet a lot of fascinating, great people, and then home in on the sort of the little sliver of guys who sort of get into these dark corners and start making up plots.
And then find the funny side of that.
Yeah.
Turn into a movie.
Well, funny enough, it sort of arrives in the wrong order, because you start seeing that there's a funny side and then you think, okay, well, I better understand what the context of this is. So you sort of like, you have to park your laugh in an arrested... You lock your face halfway through a laugh and then travel around meeting people for 2 years and they look at you thinking, why does he look like that? And you can't say, well, secretly, I'm halfway through a laugh. You have to then just explore the subject seriously. And then at the end, finally, it croaks out.
That's the perfect way to explain the writing of a comedy like this. Four Lions, well, it opens nationally in August. If you want to check it out, the 19th of August. But tomorrow, if you are in Sydney, at 7 p.m., there is a showing at the State Theatre for the Sydney Film Festival. And 10 a.m. Sunday morning, there will be another showing. And this matinee showing is where you, Chris, get up and do a Q&A with Julian Morrow from The Chaser.
Yeah, that's right. And I'd say that's the one to go for now, because the other one's sold out. So Sunday morning one is the one to come along. But it's I'm looking forward to that, because, you know, there's obviously some business to examine. I'm going to ask him a lot of questions.
Julian Morrow, you are no stranger to the satirical news with The Day Today and Brass Eye. The Chaser, very similar in that style. They've been doing that
well, they had a kind of relaxed... They sort of chatted it out, didn't they? I mean, they had a sort of relaxed kind of discursive manner, and they covered all sorts of subjects.
They had a show called CNNNN, which was actually much more sort of down the...
The Onion are doing now. They're doing some really good sort of video newscasts, and they're really kind of precision. They're in a way, they're a bit like that track you've just played. They have a kind of quantized precision to the way they do their little video news clip comedy, and it's good, you know. And they have lots of different levels of humour going on at the same time. In fact, they did one about an Al-Qaeda theme one where they had a sort of a studio debate with a guy saying, look, when you look at 9/11, there's a lot of questions to answer. Those towers, they collapse like demolished buildings. I think there's something that we ought to be finding out here. And then they cut over to a guy saying, what do you think? And he was basically dressed in Arab headdress, and he was an Al-Qaeda spokesman. He said, look, we planned this operation for 7 years. Of course it was us. Don't begin to suggest it was a conspiracy theory. It was ours, and we're proud of it. And they just kind of played that riff as a sketch. And it was good.
And it could have been in Brass Eye, perhaps.
Maybe. I mean, everybody has their slightly different style of doing things, you know, as you say about The Chaser as well. But, you know, I've had to sort of do a crash course on The Chaser, so I'll probably sound like a sort of speed freak drunk if I try and recall some of the things that they've done. But, you know, I'm looking forward to that conversation very much, yeah.
Well, and you can pretend to be a fan of theirs.
I don't have to pretend. I just have to cram it all into a small space of time.
Awesome.
I've suddenly become a massive fan.
That's good. That's what happens.
You can get drunk on that stuff.
You come to Australia.
Am I going to be at that Q&A, Chris?
Yeah, I'd like to invite you up three-quarters of the way through.
Okay.
To shift the tone. Unless you want to... You could ask a question.
I should just come up and bleed on everyone.
Excuse me, I have a... Yeah, you could do a question.
I'll be a proper, like, front row.
You could do one of those questions at all of these film screenings. Always have those questions like, what lens did you use in the third scene?
No one's actually asked that.
Yeah, he asked that on the DVD commentary, for Christ's sake.
Did I?
Yeah. Chris, what lens did you use for the...
Well, because I've been waiting in all these... I've done so many Q&As and all these, like, bespectacled, befuddled, kind of tweedy people kind of sat on the front row going,
hi there, Chris. Congratulations on an excellent film. I did want to ask, though, were you any way influenced by J.J. Marx's essay on the four jihadis in the balloon?
If only that had happened.
And if you want to hear more of Kay Van's amazing impersonations, just look up Phone Jacker on the internet. You'll find a bunch of them. Well, have fun in this weekend. You're only in Australia for the weekend?
Yeah, we are. We're here for far too short a time, and we're just trying to contrive ways of staying.
Mm-hmm. Your passport.
Well, that volcano could help us, couldn't it?
Long way away.
Yeah, but it could help us with landing, and that might... Mm-hmm. Backfire on the flight taking off.
Yeah, it's a long process.
Yeah,
25 hours to find out if it didn't work.
Yeah, what would you suggest?
Lose your passport, cut it up.
Okay,
go get on a
plane. Yeah, immigration here was quite severe.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's
more
quite
for
a
you
lot
or Kayvan.
Well, I don't know. Did you get any hassle on the way through? When we went to the Sundance Film Festival, you know, the two Pakistani guys who came over from the cast did have an interesting procedure. They were put in a glass box and asked questions from various different people in various different languages.
Were they?
Yeah. And they took it all with great equanimity, but did you get filtered?
But here I was quite nervous about the whole, Australia has very strict quarantine laws. If you have any fun-sized Toblerones in your bag, please declare them immediately. And I told three separate people at the airport that I had Toblerone, and no one cared.
Well, there you go. That's a message from the jihadists. Yeah, bring your Toblerones into Australia. No one cares. Oh, dear. All right, Four Lions opens nationally 19th of August and Sunday morning, 10 a.m. at the State Theatre for the Sydney Film Festival. Julia Morrow from The Chaser having a Q&A with you, Chris Morris, and you, Kayvan, asking ridiculous questions three quarters of the way through.
Yes, yes.
Very please. Exciting indeed. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome times indeed.
Lindsay McDougall is the doctor, not a doctor, on Triple J.